Welcome to the Awake Church Podcast. At Awake, our mission is simple. Know God, take action. We pray this podcast will help you on that journey.
Right, and then grandkids, I don't know about grandkids yet, but I hope to very soon. But we get trained in all kinds of things in life. Why not the thing that is most dear to us? You know, just get keys from other people who are learning and who are doing this for a living, meeting with people, and who have keys to offer to us. So we really have chosen an important thing today to just be the best parent that you can be. So thank you for coming. Okay, I'm going to pray before we get started. God, we need you. We welcome you into this moment in time. I just know that each heart in here is so in love with their children, and they want to be the best leader, guide for their child. And I pray that today there would be offerings of keys, something that is said that they could implement, a way of parenting that they can add to what they're already doing so well, God, and I just pray that that would be on offer today, and we would go home just inspired and ready to be the best parent we can be. I just pray that all heaviness, all things that we are carrying, God, can be just taken off of our shoulders as we put them onto you. You are the hero, God. You are the champion. And we just, right now, in this moment, everything that we came into this room, because we love these children so deeply, everything we're carrying that we cannot carry any longer, we were never meant to carry, we just, in the spirit, hand over to you. And God, I pray today you would help us position ourselves into who we're supposed to be in this child's life that we're concerned about. And Lord, would you speak to us specifically in this moment, in Jesus' name, amen. My name is Debbie Peterson. I think I know everybody in here, so I was supposed to. But I lead the kids' ministry at Awake Church, ages 11 to 6 months, and I was a school teacher for 20 years. I have 5 children that I have raised. My youngest is 20 years old, and it was the biggest delight of my whole life. Having kids is such a gift. It was actually the way farthest, hardest thing I've ever done in my life. It takes every moment and every space of who you are. Yes?
Yes.
And I made it, y'all. Yeah! But you think that now that out, but now this raising adult or being a parent of adult children is no joke. If you haven't got, I don't even want to tell y'all that I'm there yet, but this is another chapter that you have to learn who you are in this place and what your part is. And the Lord spoke something to me last week, 2 weeks ago, how to care without carrying. And that is something that you grow in. Yeah. So I'm not the speaker for today, so I'm going to have these beautiful women tell who they are and a little bit about themselves so you can get to know them.
I'm Andrea Line. If you don't know me, I know most of the faces in this room, but I attend here at Awake. My professional background is I worked as a clinical and school psychologist for most of my career, and before I moved to Winston-Salem, I was running a therapeutic boarding school which is like a residential treatment for adolescents and young adults. So my heart has always been for young people. I've worked with families and young kids all ages, but specialized really in the transitioning years, which are usually, especially now we know, really, really challenging in the culture that we live in. So I'm married and I have a daughter. I have just one. I will share a little bit later after introductions, like how my parenting journey began, because I like to share it from a place of humility. Parenting is the most joyful, wonderful gift we get to have, I think, on this planet, aside from marriage. And God uses that to shape us. And I never want to speak about parenting, even though I have all the, you know, all sorts of degrees and experience. I'm speaking parent to parent from all the learned lessons, the hard lessons, not from a place of like I know it all at all. So, but I do have some gems that I hope I can share with each of you today.
And I'm Martha Metzler. I have a practice here in Winston-Salem. So I'm a licensed counselor. I have three boys, 13, 11, and 7. I actually was laughing. I like came from the football field this morning. So like my voice, I was like, stop screaming, Martha, because I thought I'd be the like mom that was like, you're doing great. You're doing great. Now I'm like, nah! So there was a lot of screaming. And I was like, okay, I got to simmer it down. I'm married to an amazing man and Sam for almost 20 years now and have been practicing. I was in a school setting. Actually, that's how I met Debbie. So I was a high school guidance counselor for 8 years and then have been running my own private practice for another, it's almost 10. So, and I'm just so thankful to do what I do. I do feel like it is, I'm sure you can say the same thing. It's a ministry. And I think what's been really awesome to see over the last decade or so is the, I think the openness in how faith and mental health are colliding and embracing each other, which has been really sweet. Even just like my heart too is that we don't ever, the people that come into my office, for them to know like whatever it is we are facing, it is not bigger than you are, but we absolutely know it's not bigger than our God. And so he has uniquely wired us with coping skills and tools and these gems that, you know, I think that we're going to be able to get into today, that it doesn't have to be an either or, because we worship a really creative God. And so we get to experience these both and dynamics of the emotions, the trust, right? Like we get to hurt while pursuing healing. We get to struggle while also trusting. And we see that emotional pilgrimage in Jesus. And so that's sort of been a heartbeat of mine in my practice. So yeah, I'm thankful to be here.
Yes, we're thankful to have you. So now we're going to go and just share like something I always call it, what we think every parent should know, like just a tip of something that we think every parent should know. And so I'm going to go first and have these ladies share, and they can share one one too. And I think that something I'm gathering my journey right now is that sometimes I can have keys to raising my kids and giving them over to God and just reading a parenting book. And recently I just felt the Lord say to me to parent from a position of being a daughter instead of this separation where you're reading a book and putting keys in practice. Just like I'm separate from God, but I learned all these things from God, and I'm from this position. I had gotten myself out of position because I think that we think the child is most important, but when the child is hurting, we are too. And so God wants me to come back to daughter and him being my God and loving him from that position where I'm not doing this out on my own and I don't really matter. It's just the child that matters. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so he's brought me back into this place of like, I feel your pain too, and I want you to connect with me so then you can care from that place. So that's going to be important for me. Mm-hmm.
Well, before I share my one piece, it actually dovetails. It's very much in line with what Debbie just said. I just wanted to share very briefly, because it relates to my gem, that my own experience with my earthly parents was challenging, to say the least. And I'm sure some of you in this room can probably relate to that in some measure, or you know someone in this church who can relate to that. It's not uncommon, unfortunately. And while I love my parents very much, they brought into their marriage and their childbearing, I'm the oldest of four, a lot of their own unhealed wounds, which we all have, which we bring in, you know, no matter who we are, where we are in our journey. And they didn't have the tools really that they needed. And they didn't live in a world like we have today where we have all sorts of resources at our fingertips. So I have a lot of compassion for them. But the reality was I grew up in a difficult childhood and an even more difficult adolescence. And it's not a coincidence that I ended up devoting most of my career helping teenagers and young adults who couldn't make it out in the world. They had to come and live in a structured, nurturing setting because their families, their communities, their schools just didn't know what else to do. So God has used me, and it's been very healing. I was the person in graduate school that said, I'll work with the little kids and I'll work with the older people, but like not the teenagers. Don't give me the teenagers. And he knew exactly what I needed, and he knew what I could give to them. And then my parenting journey started out of my very broken place. And at 19, very unexpected, because I was like straight-A student, and I was going to go get my PhD, and I was going to do all this stuff, and I got pregnant. Not to someone I thought, oh, I want to spend the rest of my life with this person. Like, I just got pregnant, and I felt ashamed. I felt like, oh my gosh, how did this happen to me? Like, I was raised in the church, even though my parents weren't great at, like, representing Christ necessarily, but they did raise me in the church. And so it was just this awful experience. But I made a decision when I got pregnant that, okay, this has happened, and I'm going to use this as a major pivot moment in my life. And God has just helped me every step of the way. So I didn't say earlier, my daughter now is 27 years old. I've been through the gamut of infancy to 27. And I just want to remind you, no matter how old your kids are right now, most of the time, God willing, if you and your children get to live a nice long lifespan, most of the time that you're going to be in relationship with your kids is in adulthood, when they're in adulthood, right? So that 18 years, we did the baby dedications this morning, I thought, oh, it's just, it goes by so fast, you know, like those of us who know, it just goes by so fast. But I share that, just my backstory, because sometimes people, if you meet me nowadays and you might see, I'm married now and my financial situation is very different than when I was a single mom. I was a single parent for most of my parenting life. So my daughter was almost to college when I got married. So it was just like, if you guys have seen Gilmore Girls, that was our life. Well, minus like the very wealthy parents. I didn't have that. But we lived in this little New England town in Massachusetts, and that show came out, and my daughter and I watched it like religiously every week. It was like, oh, like, let's just romanticize our life. But you know, there was a lot of tears, because I was like, how am I gonna pay the bills? And like, I put myself through school and raising this girl. And so I say all that because I made a million mistakes. I did the very best I could. I took parenting very seriously. I was in school studying all of this stuff in my 20s, and I was trying to apply it early on. And even then, it's just like what she said, and this is when I prayed, Lord, what would you have me say to your people about parenting? And this is my heart cry for the body, is we aren't always, we get busy, and we don't always give the same amount of attention to the generational stuff, whether we want to call it generational trauma or bondage or whatever it is that we walk into parenthood with because of unresolved things, even things that they don't even have to be big, big trauma stuff. Just like the culture of your family that maybe was just a little off from God's kingdom ways, right? We all have our version of that, and it doesn't make our parents bad, nor does it make us bad parents, but I feel like God is saying, please, if you can do anything, there's all the strategies and techniques and you know, things around social media or technology that we can talk about or whatever is on your heart today, but the biggest gift you can give your child, because you can start at any point, even if you have a child who's 23 and you're like, oh my gosh, I didn't do this, I messed up, right? God makes a way always for restoration, and my heart is for the parents to turn, the fathers, right, to turn their hearts back to their children, because especially in this day, there are so many who are cutting off relationships when they get to their adult years, or maybe cutting off even before, and parents are at a loss, and I work with a lot of parents right now. I do a lot of parent coaching, and they're just like, I don't know what I did wrong. And they don't know what is the path back to that relationship. So before we get into all the nitty-gritty about like the details of parenting, the relationship. God has a relationship with us, and he's designed us to prioritize the relationship above anything else. And so anything that is holding you back because of your identity, of you not fully stepping into the full identity of a daughter and a son, of that sonship that Matt was speaking about this morning, when we finally get free, and there's levels of freedom, but when we get free, the parenting will flow. And God's going to give you, every child is so unique and just, you know, different. So he's going to give you, he's going to put the right people in your place for the wisdom, or he's going to give you those little Holy Spirit whispered ideas of like what to do with this kid versus this kid. But that is going to be, both in the church and a lot of the parents that I work with who are not Christians, but they're doing their work. We call it doing the work. It's like doing your work. That will pay dividends here on out. So the earlier you can do that, and if you're like, I don't know how to do that, come talk to me afterwards and we can chat a little bit. But that was what I felt like was on my heart. And it very much is what you're talking about, just yep. like parenting from that place always.
Yeah. I love that we're like scaffolding off of each other because we actually didn't even share with like what. We call it my friend Andy always calls it the hard work of the heart work, where you really get into your own work so that you can parent out of that restoration and that redemption as a modeling to your kids. And even you're saying like even if your kids are adult age, like we wouldn't do what we do if we didn't believe that redemption and rewrites of your story can happen at any time. So I just want to encourage you of that. If I could share, and I was like really praying through, if I wanted y'all to walk away with one thing, what would it be? And I think it's, a phrase that we say a lot in our family, and, you know, I like came up with it for my kids. And then I have actually found that like, I'm actually saying it to myself more often than they are. Which is, respond, don't react. Respond, don't react. And I think that's when we as parents, maybe because of our fear, because of our shame, because of maybe our own expectation or our own stuff, sometimes when things feel chaotic or our kids share something really hard or we find out something that they haven't shared with us that feels really hard, and our brain can feel like a snow globe that's been shaken up. And what we need to do is like in that moment, and it's, yes, it's a gift for our kids, sure. It's also a gift to ourselves for us to pause, take a breath, let the snow globe settle so that you can be like, okay, respond, don't react. And that's where you can kind of pray, usher in that Holy Spirit of like, okay, let's actually get, and I always say, let's meet our kids in that moment with curiosity and empathy. To me, that actually sort of just makes room for what the Lord is going to do in that moment with our kids, whether it's a hard conversation, whether it's making space for them to actually share the thing that we found out about them, whether it is, even if it's just, if we have littles of like, instead of being like, why aren't you tying your shoe? Be like, okay, hold on. But again, it's when we swoop in with our agenda, when we react, it's our agenda. And it's what it's doing is actually sending them the message that we don't think they can handle it on their own, that they can't access. And this can span between a 2-year-old and a 20-some-year-old, right? Like whether it's us swooping in when we see them struggling with their shoe or, you know, a sibling battle, or in their marriage as adults. When we swoop in, and then obviously all the ages in between, we're sending them that subconscious message that we don't think they can handle it on their own. So it not only steals their opportunity to recognize their own resiliency and their own grit, but what it also does is we fill in the gap that God's voice actually needs to fill in their life. Because we're kind of, when we react, we're responding with our agenda or our expectations of the way we think they should handle it. Instead, so the questions that I always start with 3 questions. And again, for my 7-year-old to 13-year-old, And then even like the young women that I mentor or that I see in my office, the three questions of, okay, when they share something hard or when they're going through something hard, I'm like, okay, I'm like, have you prayed about it? And what do you want to do? What do you want to do about it? And that sort of gets them to be like, okay, let me actually then search and develop that relationship with the Holy Spirit, but also with their own kind of moral compass, right? Their own grit, their own resilience. And then the second question, I'm like, okay, is there anything I can do to help? And is there anything I'm doing that makes it worse? Because what that does is it's then, it's like creating this communication openness where they're seeing, hopefully, that, okay, we trust you. Even if inside we're like, I don't trust what you're gonna do. I already know how this is gonna play out. But then failing is actually a really amazing thing, even if it feels incredibly hard for us to watch. It's so necessary for them to figure out their own story, but also the story that like God has for them, not us. That's so hard. Because again, we see them doing things, especially like now that I have this little teenager, I'm like, you're going to regret this. You're going to regret it. You're going to regret it. Because I'm like, I know how this is going to play out. But every time I actually stop myself, and I don't do it perfectly at all, like these talks that I give and the book that I wrote, like it is never out of a place of expertise. It is total empathy. Because again, it's, we all just, there's just no perfect script for parenting, because that's why we have to rely on the only perfect parent that we have. But when we make space for them to figure out their own way, even if it means them falling on their face some and stumbling, and we meet them with grace, we meet them with pointing them to the Father, and also the questions of like, okay, well, how are you going to recover? How do we want to bounce back from this? How do you want to bounce back for this? Have you prayed for it? How can I help? Is there anything I'm doing that's making it worse? And we get to actually then respond instead of react, because we've made space for them to seek the Lord, for them to understand too, the sun still comes up when I fail. The sun, like mercies are new the next morning. I get to access God's grace because whatever this hard thing is that we're going through, okay, mom or dad didn't swoop in, so they must not fear this hard thing that I'm going through. Because when we do swoop in, yes, we're sending them the message. We don't think they can handle it on our own. But also, if they sense, they're like sharks, you know? Like, they can sense if we fear it. And so they're like, oh, okay. She's not fearing it. He's not fearing it. Dad's not fearing this. Okay, so that means I don't have to fear this really hard thing that I'm going through.
And they feel your confidence in them.
Yeah. And but more importantly, like, our confidence in the Lord. That, like, even if we blow it, if they blow it, okay, mercies are new tomorrow.
Yeah, that's right. That's so good. I'm curious, in this room, how many of you had a parent who expressed their heart to you and said, I love you so much. I want to be the best parent I can be. How can I love you better? Has anyone in this room had a parent that really you could feel from them, or they communicated what was on their heart about wanting to be their best self as a parent? And don't you think that you would have fallen into a puddle if your parent would have said that to you?
Even today. Even if they said it today.
Yes, yep. Of course, yes. Mm-hmm. When about 3 years ago, my father-in-law said, I want to be the best father-in-law that I can be. How can I love you better than I have been doing? I could not talk. I was like, like I couldn't breathe. So, I want some homework tonight. Go to your kids and just tell them that much, even if they're grown, and just say, I want you to know something that I thought you would just all know already, right? Of course, we think our kids know this. To say it is so powerful. And so to say to your child, I'm learning how to be a parent too, and this is one of the most important things in my whole life, to be a great parent, and I want you to know that. I'm doing my very, you know, just to share it. And to also say to your, this is a new thing Matt and I have been doing. Can I have a redo? Mm-hmm. Can I have a redo? Yes. Like, I was so frustrated with one of my kids, and Matt came in and said the sweetest thing to me, and he got a little, yeah, out of me, and I said, redo. Yes. And then it makes it the room so light. And so I thought, we need to carry this out to our kids too, to say, redo. Mm-hmm. Right now, I'm dealing with something that has nothing to do with you. You don't have to tell them what that thing is. And I just took all that stuff and I just said it all to you. Can I just take this moment to say, redo? And yes, however you redo that moment is so powerful. We've found it powerful in our marriage that we've started doing this. And I think that it's powerful with kids too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can I share a funny story? Please. So we had the reset button in our family.
Nice.
And I do think, like, I am a big believer in kind of, whether it's a family verse, these family, like, taglines almost, these family mottos. Because, again, our kids, whether they are little to adults, like, these rhythms, these almost these habits, they bind you together and they allow you to kind of, like, flash light when you need it. And so we have this reset button. And my kids actually, like, when they were younger, built them out of Legos. And so they, like, walk it around. And we do. We would say, like, hey, can we go find that reset button? Like, so when I lose it, like, or impatient, I reacted instead of responded. They'll, like, bring me the reset button and be like, do you want to hit this? And I'm like, well, that feels personal, but sure. Yeah. And they'll also, like, they will come in on their own and be like, hey, can I hit the reset button? I'm really sorry, I lost it on you earlier. I was like, yeah, absolutely. We get to reset. And then we talk about, like, the actually greater implication of, you know what, like, love keeps no record of wrongs. And we actually get to, like, live that out as a family. And so, like, we don't even really need to process what happened. You were just really hangry. So, like, we just can move on and you can hit the reset button and we'll go about our day and love each other in a new way. But the other, literally it was yesterday, so I can't even be like, this is something I've learned from. It was yesterday. And they were all in the dining room and I was trying to do too many things. One of them asked me one thing, I think it was like where his water bottle was, and it was literally next to him. And I like was way too sharp-tongued with him. And then I heard them all it's kind of funny when your kids actually then just start commiserating together. And they'd be like, let's just stay in here. I don't know where the reset button is. So let's just stay in here. And I was like listening to it. And I was like, I kind of am loving this little friendship that's happening in here. And then I heard them start to use language that I had used before. She didn't respond. She reacted. And then I heard the 7-year-old go, I think she's overtired. So I was like, okay. I walked in, I was like, I don't know where the reset button, but we can just make it right here. Here's my reset button. I gotcha. You know, like, so when you have these little, like, language that you share as families, it also is a way to connect all of you. I mean, I am all for memory verses as a family and that kind of thing. But then there's also great things where you actually get to create your own little rhythms of connection to remind each other of, you know, hey, let's remember we can even stay connected when we're feeling disconnected.
Yes, that's very funny. I don't know how many people actually in here have older children, because there's a wide range of ages in here. I think as your children get older, especially once they hit the, you know, those teen years, and they start asserting their independence, which is part of what those teenagers, you know, are meant to do. But it can be, and I realize I've worked with sort of the more extreme situations. But we used to always say redo. We'd always encourage our families to ask for redo. Sometimes, if there have been ingrained patterns of communication that feel really hard to know how to get out of in the moment, I do recommend, and for if you have little ones now, this probably doesn't apply to you, but once you get older kids, if it really starts feeling like even when we try the redo, we just get tangled back up. Right? Like sometimes that can happen in marriages. Like, right? There's just these communication patterns. And it's like, oh, we really want it to be better, but then we try. We're back feeling bad again. And so we don't know how to do it. So that is when it's really, really helpful to have a neutral third party to help slow down that communication. There's different ways we can do it. I like to use writing letters back and forth sometimes if we really need to slow it down, because it gives much more time for the response. Because if you are going to go to your children today, which I agree with Debbie, it's wonderful as a parent, if you can truly ask your child in good faith, what can I do to be the best parent for you? Or that's my heart. I want to do better. What is it that I can do? You have to be prepared to hear their answer. You can't just say it because it sounds like a good idea that Debbie said. You have to be ready. And usually what they're going to tell us are the very things that we hate the most about ourselves, that we wish weren't true. Because our kids see the ugliest, ugliest sides of us. They see it. They see it their whole life. And so if you're going to say that and you're going to ask it, you put on your big girl pants, you know, and you got to be ready to respond with love and maturity, and even if it's really hard to hear. And again, I'll flip it and say, if you're one of your parents that you've maybe had a challenging relationship came to you and you finally said, oh, they're asking, and you told them, and then they just got defensive and got angry and walked out, how would that make you feel? Mm-hmm. So I've seen this sort of go sideways, and then it just doesn't go well. So if you're in a kind of situation, relationship, where it's just like, I don't know, then, you know, get some outside help, even if it's a pastor. It doesn't have to be a therapist necessarily, but just someone who can help navigate those hard conversations, even if they seem like easy conversations, or they should be easy. They usually are harder just because of the history.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know that many of you came here because you have something that you want to help, you want to try to work out or mm-hmm. like some guidance with. And so we have more to share, but I wanted to open it up to anything that someone might want to say. I'm really needing help with this. So I want to open that up. If anyone has a question they want to ask, then we can go back to sharing.
You can even say it like, I have this friend who has this issue. I don't struggle with it, but I know someone who does. Because it's hard. I say that like sort of lightly, but it's hard. Like parenting, all of you who are in here, first of all, I applaud you because you've taken the time out and signed up to do this. And that already says something about your heart as a parent, right? There are tons of parents out there who will never even think to go to a parenting talk because they don't need to, or you know, they're just not thinking about it. So, but to be vulnerable and just to put it out there in a space, and this is a safe space, and we can edit it out so you don't have to have your stuff out there. I just want to encourage you to do it. I promise you, with all of our combined experience, there's probably nothing that we have not seen or heard or something like it. So it's not going to shock us. It's pretty, there are some universal themes. I know specific families have their specific things, but.
So as far as respond in that, do you have any advice or tips for when it's hard to take that moment? And
yes.
It's like way easier to just snap.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, and it's actually the things that I, and again, like nothing but empathy, and it's, some of the same tricks and tools that I tell my boys or that I tell my clients that I use myself. So I am a big believer as even if it's like a 1 minute break of like, and I'm really transparent with my kids of, hey, I am feeling really pushed right now. I need a minute. And I like literally, I'm like, and sometimes I can't even access that those words, but my kids know because we've had these conversations in non-heat of the moments where we talk about the need for a break. And it doesn't mean you're running away from the problem because we always come back to each other, but it means you're letting the snow globe settle. Where I say like, if I just need to do this or I do this, I don't ever, we have talked about it enough. So I encourage every family to have these conversations when it's not the heat of the moment. That's part of the recovering, right? Like, so when there is blowups, because there will be, I mean, we are human. But when we kind of recover and have these conversations, a lot of that is planning of saying like, hey, when mommy does this or mommy does this, it's not the silent treatment. It is like, I am going to take a break so that I can come speak to you in a more loving way. And guess what? When you're also feeling this way, you can go take this break. So for me, yeah, like I either am like, hey, I am feeling very prickly right now. I need a minute. And then I'll go. And even if it's like just stepping around the door or if we're in public, I'm like, hey, you stay right there. I'm going to take right here. And then I kind of like go somewhere else in my head, even if I can't physically leave them. And I really am like, I take the, I do a lot of rhythmic breathing because I really believe that, again, we worship such an amazing creative God that he's given us these tools and this trick just within ourselves to access peace and to choose peace and pursue it. And so like I do these rhythmic breathings where I do like four counts in and four counts out. For me, I love the water. So I like picture an ocean wave coming in. I even kind of even do like a slight rock and then four counts out and I picture the wave just as a way of like honestly settling my nervous system so that I'm not like so overstimulated and prickly that I'm reacting out of that, because he has created us to be so mind and body connected. So the breathing, even if you can't physically get away and take that moment, tell them what you're doing, because again, that's just really good modeling so that they don't fear the next time that they are feeling really prickly and overtired or like they're going to lose their mind of and throw it onto you. But instead be like, hey, I'm going to do some breaths. Give me just 1 minute. And then you do the four counts in and then out until you feel your nervous system regulated. And then if you're ready, like when you're ready, and then you can have that conversation. A lot of times too, I'll do we call it the Jedi thumb trick because I have all boys and that just worked for us. But where I like squeeze my thumb for 10 seconds to where I like literally I'm like, okay, God, everything that is like feeling really frustrating right now is in the palm of my hand. And now I'm about to release it to you. I don't know like where the conversation's necessarily going to go after this, but it at least is giving me a moment to be like, okay, God, then I am going to. And then when you open it and you count backwards from 10, what you do is you feel that, even just muscularly, you actually feel the nerves release, the tension. But it's a way, too, of having a posture of openness and saying, like, okay, God, again, I might not know the way through this conversation next or what my best response is, but I'm at least going to take these, so it's 20 seconds total, and then you're ending, though, with a posture of, okay, will you just lead this conversation? Will you show me what to say, even if it's some silence, even if it's, hey, I still don't have the words, buddy, or sweet girl, I still don't really know what to say in this situation, let's pray. Or can we just walk? Sometimes even just like getting a change of scenery if you're home or whatever, it's taking that break together, even if you don't necessarily know the best words afterwards. Give it as much time as you need, but from that posture of openness.
Can I just add, those are wonderful like concrete tools that every parent, no matter the age, can use. The other, if I was gonna pick a second point that I wanted to highlight today, it is around parental self-care. And I've worked with moms and dads, but mostly a lot of moms. And I just wanted to pull some stats because the U.S. Surgeon General just actually released an advisory report in August of this year, highlighting this issue because it is such an issue. We know the mental health crisis for young people, but for parents, this is according to the 2023 data, 33% of parents report high levels of stress in the past month compared to 20% of other adults. 41% of parents say they're most days they are so stressed they cannot function, and 48% of parents say that most days their stress is completely overwhelming compared to 26% among other adults. So I want to highlight 48%. I mean, that's like half, right? Half of parents. So if we just took this room, we say, okay, half of you are feeling so overwhelmed that you don't know how to function. And so while I think it is beautiful and we should have, it's great to have a tool case with all the tools and the things and the breathing and the, all of that is great. But if we're not dealing with the foundation of our well-being, or if it feels impossible, I mean, there are seasons of life that it's just hard, right? When you have little ones, or you've got three under three, or something like that, like it's hard. When you're a single parent and you're paying the bills and working and raising a child by yourself, it's hard. Like, there's no tag team. There's no one to like say, I need a break, you know? So I understand how hard it is. And even more important than that, we have to lean in. We've got a beautiful body in this church. We've got neighbors. We've got, hopefully, if you have family nearby, that's great. But we have got to support parents and ourselves and to prioritize ourselves so that we are not left emotionally vulnerable as much to those feelings of like, I'm just gonna lose it. And I can do all the breathing exercises in them all day, but like I'm tired constantly. I'm stressed, I'm financially worried, I'm whatever the things are in your life that that create this foundation of just, you know, it's just not stable. So God wants to help us do that. And I'm not saying you're struggling with that. It just made me think of that for moms especially, but for dads too. It's a really stressful world we live in nowadays. And so don't feel guilty to prioritize yourself. I love it when I hear, I have some friends in this church who, you know, like the dad goes and plays golf with my husband on Sunday. And then like the mom, I know she gets a few hours on Saturday. And because they've got little ones and they've got to find a way and they can do that as a couple to like give each other a break because it fills the cup. You know, like that dad is like, can I play golf every Sunday after church, right? Like it fills the cup and the mom gets time hopefully with whatever she needs to do, go for a walk by herself, no one's touching her, or whatever she needs to just like take a breath and know like I can get through this week or I can get through this day, making sure you get enough sleep, making sure you're moving your body, like all the things that we could just speak about on mental health for all people, including your kids, but that's going to, I think I speak with so many moms who just feel guilty or they just feel like it's impossible, or if they do take some time out for themselves, they're like the worst mom in the world. And I don't know where we, actually, I know where we get it from. I mean, I felt the same way. So I'm on the other side of it now, and I'm like, I love taking time for myself. I'm also in a different season of life. But I would say if I could go back and tell my younger self what to do differently, I would have been like, oh my gosh, ask for help. And then when someone offers help, take it, you know, and put yourself to bed earlier if you can, you know, like just little things like that. I just needed to parent myself better in order to be a better parent. So,
you know, I think that, you know, our parents, okay, some of us grew up in the 80s, or our parents weren't having these kind of problems that we're having or these kind of stresses we're having, because obviously, we now live in a different culture where we brought technology in and kids aren't outside playing. I saw this person posted recently. There's no kids with broken legs in classrooms anymore and broken arms because kids aren't outside playing.
Right.
We have now mental health issues, you know? And so I would like to have some conversation about what I think is probably on all of our hearts and minds, and that is that our children are being exposed to things before they are ready for them. And some of it we do not have control over. Like, you know, as far, you know, when my kids were in high school, we didn't, when they were freshmen, we did not want them to have a phone yet. But some of their school stuff, they had to have a phone for the communication that was going on among students. They had to be on a computer. And our young people, like how many of you had friends when you were in high school that were having mental health issues? It was unheard of. Right? And if people did, it wasn't talked about. So possibly it was there, but can we admit that it wasn't what it is now? Right? And so the thing that we've changed the most is bringing technology and the computer and social media, mm-hmm. social media into our world. So how do we raise children that are healthy with all of these traps that are set for them that we didn't encounter when we were kids? But yet we're trying to help our kids maneuver through these spaces with more than they're ready to handle. They don't have the maturity level to handle these things, mm-hmm. and yet they're right in front of them. Yeah. They have no choice. So
this is, you know, I think that, and it is so layered, just like most hard things, right? There is just no one perfect way through, because otherwise, like, there'd just be one book on it, and then we'd just all be like, okay, cool, done. So I do think a lot of it is looking at the heart behind it all. So with technology, I think that first and foremost, we also have to check ourselves, right? Like, what does our use look like? I know there's a lot of talk about Jonathan Haidt's new book, Anxious Generation. If you haven't read it, it is a great wealth of knowledge. It also gives like very tangible things. But when you get to the heart of it, it's one of the number one predictors of what our kids' relationship with technology will be is ours, what they've noticed in ours. And so are we, anytime we have a downtime at a stoplight, in a waiting room, whenever, like, are we immediately pulling out to respond to a text or answer an email or just scroll, right? How do we handle, what does rest look like for us, right? Like, do we consider rest numbing out at night and scrolling? Because I will push you a little bit, and again, from nothing but a place of empathy, and having to have really hard, like, mirror conversations with myself about this, that's not rest, that's numbing. That's escape, it's avoidance, it's numbing. That's not full rest. Rest refills your cup. So, like, after you've scrolled, when the kids are in bed, do you feel rested? No, I don't. I'm like, my bread didn't look like that. You know, like, I don't feel any better about myself. I can't make a sourdough loaf that looks like a turkey. Like, you know, it's not that. It's true. Yeah. So, like, they're looking at us, right? They're looking at us and how we are using it. When they walk into a room, if they see this or this, they're not going to feel the openness to talk to us. And they think that's a normal way to handle boredom. To connect, right? So we have to also, first and foremost, let's have the hard conversations with ourselves. But then I think our role and call as parents is to develop our kids' character, not necessarily their happiness. And so we are going to tick them off when we tell them their screen time limits, when we protect them from having phones. So, like, if you look at, so the anxious generation, his four norms were no cell phone before, no smartphone before high school, no social media before 16, phone-free schools, more unsupervised play, and risk play. There are four norms that we are missing. But if we hold on to those, and especially if you have teenagers or anything like that, you will see your kid will feel very lonely. They will. My 13-year-old feels wildly alone because he only has one other friend who doesn't have a phone and doesn't already have social media. And it's so hard, right? And you can, like, we have been able, I wish there was, like, one script to give you, but there's not. Like, you've got to know your kid. So by the time they're in high school, they might not be ready, impulse control-wise. If their motivation is just to zone out, then you've got to kind of be open to protect them and see when they are ready. You know, for us, we were able to kind of find a little, like, a healthy workaround because, again, he's at the age where all of his friends are making plans without me having to, and, like, praise, thank you. But that also meant, like, he needed to be able to know when his friends were going to bike to the park down the road to play. So he has a watch where they can all, like, but he can't scroll on a watch. There's no internet on that watch, right? Like, so, but he can still communicate with friends. So you need to kind of be open of, like, what's going to work best. We also know it might not make them happy all the time. We get in a lot of arguments. They are not happy with my screen limits, my protection of them. And I won't lie, part of my instinct is fearing their unhappiness. And I'm like, oh, maybe I am being too strict. Like, maybe I am. Like, maybe I should just, like, well, forget it. Just do whatever. I won't lie. Like, this is the inner dialogue, right? This feels so hard. I'm so tired of, like, having the same argument of, like, no, we don't do this right now. Or, like, no, this isn't it. But then I'm like, okay. But also, my call as their mom is to develop their character, pour into their character, do the best that I can. Obviously, they are not my report card. So they will make choices that I can't take on as theirs, like as a success or as a failure. But I can do the best that I can to shepherd them, protect them from, like, they just know, like, social media stuff. And it's not going to make them happy all the time. And I have to make peace with the fact that that is how I can protect them right now. In my office, I do see a good amount of teenagers. I can't tell you how many come in having already diagnosed themselves because of stuff they've seen on TikTok. I'm having to look up new things because they'll be like, well, I think I have this. And I'm like, oh, yeah? I'm like, that's a new one. And I was like, did you hear it from someone who knows more about lip gloss than they do mental health? Then no, please don't. Like, they are not your mental health expert. They know more about makeup tutorials than mental health, and they are not your place of expertise, right? But they do. They have this unlimited world of... When we were teenagers, we also were searching for ourselves. So this is not a new struggle. We also were trying to figure out ourselves with our 17 magazines or whatever, and or like comparing ourselves to our friends, right? Like, that was a common struggle. We're all in a place of like, who are we? But our kids now have access to honestly just a fire hydrant of information. And so when you're already coming at a place of insecurity, you're going to try to find a place of belonging anywhere that makes sense. And so what might feel like a fleeting thought then stays because they have found evidence for it. And so what, like, again, with so many issues that maybe would have never landed in their mind, I do feel like the enemy has now provided them with these false evidence folders of, okay, yeah, like, I think I do dissociate because this girl on TikTok told me that when I start to wander, I now, you know, have this disorder. And so things like that, that it's harmful information that I do think we have to protect them from. And then the last thing I'll say is with social media, it can lead them, like, eating disorders are up, self-harm is up. But it also just normalizes these struggles that might not even be valid within their life. Because again, they're searching for it from a place of belonging. And if they have found these places, I mean, there are, my best friend's daughter walked through some pretty serious mental health stuff this year. And she kind of brought me her phone and said, like, will you help me see? I don't even know how to access what she searched for. And there were countless sites of, like, how to hurt myself better, how to be a better anorexic, and there were just countless upon countless Reddit pages, TikTok accounts that were just telling her how to be a better anorexic, how to harm herself more, and how to take her life in a sneakier way. And these are the things that our kids have access. And so there are parameters, right? Like, we can't go Swiss Family Robinson style, even though I know that sounds tempting right now. But what we can do is protect. So there are great parameters that when your kids are older, where you can monitor and put limits, put filters. There are great softwares now that Christian companies have come up with as a way to make it ministry-based. And so again, I think that this is a call to action. We can't turn a blind eye because it is the risk is too great.
Mm-hmm. I love that we did not talk and share notes before this. I mean, we talked a little bit, but the details, and I was going to bring up Jonathan Haidt's book. Jonathan Haidt actually was my favorite professor at UVA back in the day. So I've been following his work from back when I was just a little young student. And I want to say, I mean, some of you have young children, so you haven't gotten to the stage necessarily yet. But as someone who's been in the field working with teenagers for a very long time, this stuff was happening before smartphones, yeah. Right? This was happening before the pandemic. The pandemic just, I think, got people's attention in a new way. But all of this has been building for years. And I will just share a story just to encourage you. I was also that parent who was, luckily my daughter, when she was coming into adolescence, that is when Instagram and smartphones and stuff came on the scene. So we were sort of the guinea pigs because no one had written a book about anything yet. We literally were like, what's Instagram? What is a smartphone, right? But on the other hand, it wasn't quite yet where, you know, 10-year-olds had them. So there was this little bit of time, I feel it was such a grace period for my daughter and for me, because even though I was more, way more on the stricter side, because I worked with teenagers, so I knew what was out there, like I was over there, it's a very different world today. And this is, again, not to judge anyone if you've got a young kid with a smartphone, that's not the point. It's just that those of us in the mental health field, this is not news. Jonathan Haidt's book is out there to share with parents, but we've known it. I've known this for a long time. I worked in the therapeutic boarding school. We did not allow cell phones. When smartphones came out, we said no smartphones, no social media. They lived there for an on average 2 years. Can you imagine a teenager in today's world, no smartphone, no social media? Very limited screen time. Why did we do that? Because we knew, even before all the reports, and you know, there's more evidence now, but we knew intuitively back then, like, this is not, they need in real life, real relationship. They need to learn how to build this because they don't know how. And when they asked me, I was a therapist first for many years, and then I had stepped aside for a little bit to do some substance abuse, like addiction treatment for adults. The school reached back out to me. In 2016, they said, would you come back and be the headmaster of the school? Actually, I was about to move to Winston-Salem, so I said no. But ultimately, I prayed about it, and God said, go back. So I went back, and I was mortified, because in the few years that I had left, some new people came on board, and they, I guess they just cowed to the parents or the teenagers, I don't know, but they were allowed, I came back to the school and they had cell phones, they had all this stuff, and I was like, what are we doing? What are we doing? And I remember some of the staff saying, you can't roll it back and say, we're not doing smartphones and we're not doing, there will be an uproar. And I'm saying this so you can feel emboldened, because when you know their life is on the line, a moral leader steps in and you make the hard call. And if the parents didn't like it, they could take their kid and leave. That was this is a therapeutic school. Now I know more schools are starting to think about maybe we have smartphone free, you know, settings, which I'm a huge proponent for, because they don't, the kids actually, they didn't, some of them were upset at first, of course, but in the end they said, we're so relieved. They're so relieved that the adults stood up and took leadership and said, we're not doing this right now. You have 1 year out of your life, 2 years out of your life, maybe a few months out of your life, whatever it is, to have a break from all of this world. It will be there. I had some parents say, but how will they need to know how to navigate it for when they go to college. I said, have you met a young person who hasn't figured out how to navigate it? Don't worry. They'll have it done in like 5 seconds. Don't worry. They will be fine. So, and then of course, as they got close to graduating, there was a transition time and we talked about, you know, regulating behaviors around it. But for at least these kids, they needed that really extreme approach. But I do encourage you to read Jonathan Haidt's book, not to instill fear in you, but to empower you. And I think as parents, what helps that feeling of insecurity when you're like, I'm the only one, is to try to build a tribe of other parents who are in it with you, so that when you're feeling like that, I definitely had, look, if the kids aren't upset about limits around social media, they're gonna be upset about any limit you set. And if you're not setting limits as a parent, then you're not really doing your job. And my daughter, just as a you know, I don't know if you ever heard this from your sons, but when she got into college, I remember she spontaneously called me and she's like, Mom, thank you. And I wasn't expecting it. Because I definitely was that mom. I was the mom that was like, no, you're not going to go to that party and get stoned. No, you're not going to have a cell phone when all your friends have a cell, right? I was definitely more protective in certain ways. But she got to college and she's like, I am so glad that you did what you did. And I know I was really angry at the time. She wasn't happy. But she's like, I'm so glad you did that. Because I see how they're all being now. And I don't want to be like that. And so just be encouraged. Find another parent. Hopefully it's your spouse at least, or if not, you know, someone at church or someone in the school that can just hold your hand with you through it and say you're not alone, you're not a bad parent, you're not a meanie. Like one day, even if your parent, even if your your kid doesn't thank you, you just know that you are setting them up for the most health, mental health-wise, but just all around health, because we as adults, even if we don't change our behaviors, which I agree we should model better, but our brains are fully developed. Their brains are not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I felt like my kids were a little bit younger than yours, and so they were already thrown right into it. It was full-fledged, you know, just like you almost could not be a teenager without a phone, mm-hmm. because that's how everyone communicated. Mm-hmm. Like people didn't even have home phones.
Right.
And so I parented differently in that my kids did have a cell phone. Of course, I didn't know all that was out there. And I feel like we tried to work with them to learn how to handle a phone. And probably many of you have done that way too, that they did have a cell phone in high school. But we said that this cell phone, while you're in our house, we can check this at any time. And that's how we found out most things that our kids were doing that they shouldn't do. So there'll be this pressure that you'll feel like, gosh, that's kind of indulging into their privacy. But it is not. When you're living in your home, I want to encourage you that to look at what they're looking at is very healthy for them to know that they, I know they can erase their history, but they do get really sloppy and they think that you're not going to do that. And then you do this random cell phone check and then you are like learning more about their world. And so it is increasingly getting harder and harder for teenagers not to have a cell phone.
Right. Yes, and I should clarify. My daughter had a cell phone, but it wasn't a smartphone. And at some point when she got older, she did get a smartphone, and there was that period. Cell phone and smartphones are two different things. I mean, a dumb phone. I think now they're starting to make them more. And even, again, at the school when we didn't allow smartphones. But if they traveled or whatever, we would get, you know, like the really cheap flip, like they didn't even know how to use it. It literally could call someone if there was an emergency. And so that's a cell phone, but smartphones are a computer that you can stick in your pocket. Let's just be real. It's a computer. It's not really they don't even use it as a phone anymore. But so yes, there are ways, and you should use all the software out there. And if you're not sure, like there's so much out there nowadays.
But I think too, like there's not one right way, one wrong way. So again, it's you gotta invite the Holy Spirit to give you wisdom for what's right for your kid. Not parent out of fear, but respond out of wisdom. Mm-hmm. But I think I always encourage, and we've really tried to do this in our family as well, is have it a dialogue as much as possible. Explain it, you know, let them be a part of it. When we have created, screen time contracts, and mine know, like they, you know, if we feel like they're ready, they will get a cell phone in high school, but they know social media not till 16, because we've had these dialogues with them. They are a part of the contracts. They are a part of, what do we think, where are we willing to meet in the middle about this? Do you understand the why? You don't have to be happy about the why, because again, we have to, we are teaching them to be comfortable with being uncomfortable, but we're also teaching ourselves when they are frustrated, when they might not have Snapchat, or they might not have to, you know, we have to get comfortable with being uncomfortable when they're upset with us and not fear their unhappiness. But that dialogue where you can let them know, like, hey, I know this is hard. Like, I know that this stinks, being like feeling like you're the only one that doesn't have it. And I'm asking you to trust me. What are some ways? So a big conversation we're having right now with our 13-year-old is, okay, I know that you are really frustrated that you don't have a smartphone. And I get it. It is hard. when you're seeing a lot of your friends have them. And I'm sorry that that feels really hard, and you can talk to us about it. You can be angry with us about it, and that's okay. We can receive that. What are some other ways you can experience independence and freedom? Let's talk about some of that. And he's like, well, that's all I want. I'm like, so do you see why we want to protect that from you? And he's like, so, you know, but then he's like, okay, I would like to. And then he starts expanding his brain a little bit of what are some other ways that I can feel more free, that I can have some independence where I don't feel monitored all the time, right? So he has come up with like, hey, I'd like to stay at home alone during this time. And I'm like, yeah, you've earned that. Absolutely. And I won't check the Ring cameras, you know?
Yes.
I won't see how much Cheetos you've eaten for lunch, you know? So like, and things like that. Do you know? So he can start flexing these muscles, and they also then, because then they start understanding your why. Because he has now come of like, oh, okay, I was actually obsessed with getting this thing. It wasn't, oh, you're not giving me any freedom. You're so overprotective. When really, if it was just about this one thing, like, so let me help you see what are some other ways you can feel some freedom, some independence. And then they start, again, they start growing. And they start to understand your why a little bit more. They will not always be happy about it. But they do. You're dialoguing, so you're deepening your relationship with them, and ultimately deepening your trust together, because they're also seeing like, okay, I'm secure with her, even if I'm angry about their rules. I'm secure here. There's a place of belonging here. And then they're also stretching to see, you know, okay, I can, and they are biking farther. They're spending afternoons, like I did, of like, hey, and they set alarms on their watch, the two older ones, they set an alarm on their watch to goes off to remind them, because again, I just was like, be home at 6, they were like, I don't know when that is. So like we've set an alarm to go off on their watch, and they're just, I don't know, like they're at a park, they can bike to the elementary school that's down the road where there's like basketball goals and stuff that they have access to. Yes. They just go, and they do. They call it their little biker gang. That's fine. I'm like, see you at supper.
I love it.
I know, not yet. No, actually, they have a lot of like those, you know, the whatever rub-on tattoos. And they're like, look at my sleeve. And I'm like, awesome. It's an emoji. It's not super threatening. But sure, yeah. Like I was like, they're like, look, I got the poop emoji tattoo. And I'm like, awesome.
Cool. But that's the other side, right. And so because we can talk about like the limitations, and yes, of course, anything that you set in your household hopefully will be a family discussion, yeah. You know, different levels depending on their age. But whether it's the freedom piece that needs to be fulfilled in some other way, or for a lot of these, especially, you know, young people, it's the connection piece, and they think, I can get it here. And every kid is different. And so some kids who are very well, like have really deep, healthy relationships in the real world, I'm not as worried about them than having social media. Because honestly, like they can see it for what it is, even though, you know, it's flashy and fun and still addictive. But, you know, they can kind of put it in its place because they have a real life. And so you have to know your kid and their age range, you know, their developmental level and everything. It's not good or bad. It's just, what are they actually trying to get? And it is hard in today's culture where somehow some of us, you know, have thought, well, the more friends we have on social media or the more connected we are on social media is really some semblance of how we're really connected with people. But our kids, they don't have the skills yet. And so if you are going to curb some of that for them, it's also helpful to have those discussions with them of like, how are you feeling connected at school? They might even have a lot of friends, but if they're being honest with you, they might not feel like they're really connected. And so it's helping them develop those skills in different places too.
Also, you know, the goal, like you make the boundaries, right, when they're young, but they do have to kind of have those boundaries mm-hmm. broadened when they get older. If you have a friend or a family member that's just a little farther ahead of you with older kids, you can be asking questions like, I remember when I found out about a VPN, I think I even asked Graham, what the heck is this VPN thing? Because it's rocking my world. Because I would put a, do you know what it is? Graham's going to explain after this. But like, we put this thing called a circle on our family thing. It was supposed to not let any stuff in that our kids weren't supposed to watch. And I was going to do a parenting thing and talk about this thing, to have this on all your kids' phones, because then they're not seeing stuff other kids are seeing. And then Andrew's like, anything, the only thing these kids are going to do is get a VPN, and it goes around everything. Mm-hmm. I said, do you have a VPN? He goes, yeah, everybody has one. And I'm like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, they are smart.
Yeah.
These kids are smart.
They're smart.
But if you know a parent, like a techie parent, and you don't know, like Graham, you can be learning from these parents that are in the know, that are a little bit farther than you, and say, what is out there that these kids are doing that's allowing them? Because we didn't allow our son to have a phone until he was 15. He already had a phone. Someone gave him a phone.
Yeah.
And he was in his room using it.
I mean, that's the thing.
So that's why you're working on the heart.
Yes.
But they are going to be exploring, and you're going to be helping them get out of that pit and that, because they are just not ready for this stuff. But find someone who knows about all the VPNs and all the other things out there, because they can help you know that you really don't have this thing surrounded.
Yeah, but and I would say that's where the dialogue comes in handy, right? Like, if you have created a culture where you are dialoguing with a lot of grace with each other, and you they sense that you don't fear, if you're not like every time you see them on it too much, and you're not like, get off your screen, like get, you know, if you, they are much less likely to be like, hey, I saw this thing, or hey, my friend texted me this thing, and I don't know what to do about it. Like this, if they know that. That is a trigger point for you. Guys, it's for me. Like, I'm not joking. I have made 1 million mistakes in the way that I've reacted. Even just with, like, seeing my kids sneak their, like, video game on the side, like, when we're supposed to be, like, their screen time was somehow, they saw the my screen time password that they were able to access it. And I did not handle it well. And that broke, like, that kind of put a wall for a while until I hit the reset button. But truly, like, where I'm able to dialogue more and be like, okay, you know that I have not reacted great when I've seen you on screens too long, or like when I saw that you looked something up that freaked me out and I didn't handle it well. But I'm recognizing that probably doesn't make you want to talk to me about the things that you've seen, right? And they're like, oh yeah, no, you're going to freak out. And I'm like, yeah. And I was like, so I am promising you, I'm not gonna do it perfectly, but I'm gonna really try to do better. I don't fear this anymore. And I'm like claiming that out into the, I was like, I'm naming it and claiming it that I am no longer gonna fear y'all's relationship with screen. I am gonna give it to the Lord. And I like, here are boundaries, because I really believe boundaries protect what's good. And so here are what my boundaries are. And when you go past them, because guys, guess what? You will. That's part of this. I was like, I used to tick Gammy off all the time by pushing past her boundaries. I was like, but I want you to come to me and we will recover. We will talk about it. I was like, so when you see these things that make you feel super funky, I was like, when you're like, your stomach goes off, you're thinking about it at night, that means you, like, that's your cue. I was like, that's the Holy Spirit saying, go show, like, go talk to mom or dad about this. And then again, this is where, even if you've done an amazing job opening that up, they might not. But what you don't want them to do is just go to a friend or Google. And so this is where I am a real big believer in godly mentors in our kids' lives, who they are just automatically gonna think are cooler than we are. And like, they probably aren't. So I, like, again, my boys know, like, okay, you go to this, you know, we kind of talked about mentors for them, that I've seen a natural connection based on their personalities. And they kind of, we've had very open conversations of like, if you feel funky coming to me and dad about this, that's okay. Like, we would rather you actually go to someone, like, so, you know, mm-hmm. go to Soren for this, or go to Nick for this, you know, whatever it may be. If, all right, and then they know to go of like, all right, this isn't gonna be, because the enemy operates in shame. The enemy operates in the shadows. And we, luckily, we know, like, there's no such thing as darkness to our God, right? Like, he is always going to be lighter. He is always going to be lighter than the shadows. But what we do need to do is kind of create these conversations with our kids by the stuff that they see online to not let it stay in the shadows. So bring it to light. It won't ever make you unlovable. Shame does not belong in your heart. It does not belong in our family. We're not going to let your device disciple you. You're going to go to someone who can speak truth and walk, kind of point you to the light and know that even if it's not us, that's okay. But here are these people that you have that know what light looks like. So bring it to light there. And it's been able to like kind of break that shame space because again, it, I can't tell you how many times I have seen in my office of when I have, they, like a teenager shared something with me and I said, okay, have you told your parents? And they've said, oh God, no, they're gonna think I'm terrible. So their answers are usually like, they're gonna think I'm awful. Or no, this is good. My mom's gonna be so sad about this, right? Or my dad is gonna be so angry about this. And so we've had to have a lot of conversations like, well, that's shame. That's a lie that shame has. Is it like shame loves to whisper to you of keep it in the shadows, keep it in the shadows. And so when you share these boundaries, when you share these conversations with your kids, you can let them know like, hey, when you're feeling this, when you're feeling like, oh, I shouldn't share this. I cannot tell them about this. Okay, so that's shame. Right? Allow them to kind of figure out what shame feels like inside of their body, inside of their heart, inside of their mind, so they know to recognize it. And then they know to bring it to light so that light can touch it.
Mm-hmm. I had a question that someone asked of how do you help young people who don't have like a developed mind enough to understand consequences? Mm. Like they don't understand that what they're doing has a consequence, like those two things aren't connecting.
Because of age or because of a disability or
maturity
just
problem.
Maturity? Mm-hmm. Well, the whole developmental trajectory is all about maturing. And so our job is to help them learn and start making those connections between, this, I do this, and this results. It's sort of what she was saying earlier, when we swoop in as parents, sometimes we do that because we see a natural consequence that it would be painful for them and for us, for them to experience. So sometimes we get in the way of that. Sometimes kids, just because they're young, they're immature, maybe a little bit more than the average, their peers. There are some, I don't really like to speak in diagnoses, so I'm trying not to do that, but it's also terminology that can be helpful to people. Sometimes like diagnoses like ADHD, or if you have a child on the spectrum, or if you have, or even just a mental disability of some kind, it will take that child longer to learn certain things, right? That's just the nature. And as a parent of a child like that, you have to get wisdom about how to parent that child well. But I think if we're speaking broadly, I would say there are just the psychological principles that the sooner and the more consistent a consequence can be, it doesn't have to be the exact same consequence, but that your child learns in your home, if I speak disrespectfully or if I hit my sibling or if I do X, Y, Z, like this is generally how I know it's going to be handled. And it's not going to be handled like 2 weeks from now. It's going to be handled, relatively soon, especially when they're young because they need to connect the dots. There are principles like that. I think the thing as parents that, and I will raise my hand to this, that we can bump up against because we're human and we live busy lives is that we get inconsistent. And so, or two parents have different ways of parenting, and then there's an inconsistency in that. And that can be a challenge for a child to understand, like, what are the rules here? And as that child gets older, that is a recipe, especially when the parents are on two different pages, that's a recipe for oppositional behavior. And it's not impossible to bring that kid around, but the longer it goes and the older they get, the harder it is. So the earlier that you can and your spouse can sort of get on the same page and say, I think God, he puts together men and women, very different personalities sometimes, and you have different experiences in your own home. And so it can take some work sometimes to try to get on the same page. And sometimes one parent can be really like on the grace side, you know, we're gonna give lots of grace. And the other parent's like, no, they've gotta learn this. And so I always talk to parents like there's a teeter-totter. And the more you go out on one extreme, the more your spouse feels like they have to go to the other extreme to balance you out. And that is confusing to your child. So if you have to go into your bedroom or behind closed doors to like talk it out, if something happens and you have very different ways of like how you're gonna address it, take the time, take a moment, just say pause, we need a moment. Figure it out, and the more you practice that, the easier it will get. But your child really does need you to be, when I say to be in unity, it doesn't necessarily mean you're always gonna agree with how, let's say, my husband wants to respond one way, and I'm like, that's not the way I would do it. And I might give him some input, but then at the end of the day, I'm gonna let him take the lead, and then vice versa, there might be something else, and I take the lead on it, right? So sometimes it doesn't mean you always agree 100%. But generally speaking, you're parenting with that nice balance. I think that
you're on the same team,
yeah. And you're consistent. That's the key piece.
Yeah, I think also creating these rhythms of connection with your kid, where you are talking about like hypothetical situations and what the consequences will be, right? And so making sure that you have enough downtime as a family around the supper table, like family walks, like. Asking my boys to sit still for like a lecture style is like telling them they're all going in for a colonoscopy that day. Like it is like not happening. They look like those inflatable things outside of car dealerships. Like, so we walk and I'm like, hey, have you guys ever like, you know that like, you know, have you seen whether it's about vaping, whatever, or about school safety, about, right? Like I kind of bring up hot topics and we just talk to each other. And they're like, oh yeah, that's for sure. Like I've heard my friend talk about that at lunch the other day or whatever. And so creating these actual moments of connection where you can have conversations freely without rushing to something, you're not having it in the car right before they have to like run out to school practice, because then they're gonna be like, that was random. Like she talked about fentanyl before, like my soccer practice. Like, you know, like, and so like being able to create these like, okay, we're having a hot topic night, you know? Yeah. So like hot topic, like times, and they're like kind of sacred, intentional times, because we know so much of parent is about intentionality. So it's like after supper walks on Wednesdays, or hey, we actually are all going to go out for ice cream Tuesday if you don't have sports practices, and there's like that one unicorn night where no one has a practice or whatever. That's your night, guys. So like treat it with intention, like intentionality of like, okay, we're going to go. This is our ice cream night. This is our hot topic night. And like, and they have them bring ones and be like, yeah, like, what is this? You know, like, and the things they will come up with, you're like, okay, so why don't you teach me about this? You know, like what, you know, so it's, but you're able to dialogue about it and then say like, this is the way we're going to handle it as a family.
And possibly at some moment, if like the child is not still connecting with you, I do feel like our world has done this disservice to us, in that we have so many things, either video games or something that's so real life where there's no consequence in those spaces, that we think kids can like go, they know that that's not real. But I feel like they're doing these things and they don't realize that in real life that's not how it turns
that's
out.
That's true.
They're not mature enough in their mind to know that. So you're competing with what they're viewing that seems so real.
Yes.
And so possibly there's a moment where the child needs to speak to someone besides you.
Yes.
And go see someone maybe.
Right.
Yes.
To help them. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyone have something they'd like to ask or share? Well, this has been quite helpful. Thank you so much for sharing with us today. And thank you all for coming.
Thank you for listening to today's message. For updates on future episodes, make sure to subscribe to our podcast and leave us a review to let us know how we're doing. For more information about Awake Church, visit awakechurch.com.